Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties, bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious recipes for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website at www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the last five are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about self-knowledge. Now we talk a lot on these shows about knowledge, mostly about knowledge that we attain through research, knowledge of experts, knowledge of our participants, but this time let's talk about our knowledge, self-knowledge, and how it impacts the group, how it impacts the workshop, the seminar, the mediation, the alternative dispute resolution, whatever it is we're doing. How does our self-knowledge impact that? And like we often do on these shows, let's start out. Yes, people are going, are we going to define it? Yes, we are. Thank you. I see we have lots of participation. Thank you all for being there. And we're going to define what self-knowledge is in our context, in the context of leading a seminar, workshop, mediation, negotiation, whatever it is that we're doing. What is self-knowledge within our context? Yeah, let's define it so we all know what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Oh, we have lots of good answers. In fact, we have lots of agreement. How exciting. Brian and quite a few others say that self-knowledge is awareness of our own abilities and limitations. Mm-hmm. Awareness of our own abilities and limitations. So that's self-knowledge. We know what we can do and what we maybe haven't done before. Shalona says it's not only its limitations, but it's we're understanding how to improve our limitations and a willingness to try. Mm-hmm. I know what my abilities are, and I know where I could use some brush up, some help, some additional knowledge. Mm-hmm. And so as Shalona and others are saying, it's understanding how to improve our limitations and most importantly of all, a willingness to try. Mm-hmm. Because we have recognized, people are calling it a deficit. I suppose. We've recognized an area of improvement. How's that? Mm-hmm. And we think about how we can improve it. Which means that we're willing to try. We're willing to succeed. we're an enthusiastic group. Yes, we are. Because a lot of people are saying, well, it's not try. It's willing to gain the knowledge, and then you have it, and it's not a limitation anymore. Good point. Yes, we're willing to gain the knowledge and succeed in overcoming any kind of knowledge limitation that we might have. Good point. Mm-hmm. Quite a few people, Peter and others, are saying that self-knowledge is pride in your accomplishments. Mm-hmm. I've done a lot. I'm really good at this, and I know it. This is my ability, but I've also got pride. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that I'm willing to try to upgrade my knowledge is that I have pride in my accomplishments, and I wish to keep them updated. I wish to keep them modern. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good. A lot of people are making a point that in today's era of technology going forward so fast, that one of the things you need to upgrade and it could be a limitation, and you need to be willing to keep learning is how to use the new technology. Mm-hmm. To keep upgrading, to keep learning. I must confess that I personally think that's very important. I take regular classes because, as you can plainly see, a lot of you have actually seen me in person. Thank you. Hello. And a lot of you have seen, you could look at the pictures on the website and like that, on the book, and you could see that I'm not so young. And I keep trying to keep up with the new technology so that I understand how to use it. Mm-hmm. And I understand what to do. And when somebody says, would you like to fill in the blank, I can say, yes, I know how to do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sometimes it's a good point. Sometimes it's a hardware upgrade or a software upgrade. But mainly it's a me upgrade. It's a self-knowledge upgrade. It's knowledge that I have. And I know that my self-knowledge is that I have a limitation as to what I know about technology. So I keep trying to improve, to keep trying to up my abilities. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Zhao and others are saying that self-knowledge is confidence in your own abilities. Mm-hmm. Not only knowledge of what you can do, but confidence in it, and pride and confidence of what you can do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Gerard is adding that that self-knowledge needs to be open to new learning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's true, because one of the things we shouldn't an interesting point. Quite a few people are saying that being open to new learning is not so much self-knowledge. Mm-hmm. It is because you might think of yourself as a Renaissance person. But I would say that, yeah, we're getting kind of a difference of opinion, and that's wonderful. Thank you all for being here. And a good point is being made that self-knowledge is really your competence and your pride and your confidence. And in order to keep your self-knowledge viable, to keep it up, so to speak, to remain confident, you have to be open to new learning. Some people are arguing that that is side knowledge and that self-knowledge is a core of personality. Sharon and others are saying that. It's a good point. Mm-hmm. I suppose I leaned towards the open to new learning and like that because that is part of my core. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I suppose that's true, because your self-knowledge could be very, very specific as to the type of person you are, I suppose. Yeah, okay, we've got several psychologists on, and thank you very much for being here. And they are saying that some of the things we're talking about are outside knowledge that you learn, but self-knowledge is a core personality. A core personality, I suppose. Yep, I think that's a very good idea. You know, I always say these shows are organic. They go wherever they take us. They're not scripted. And, you know, we all have differences of opinion, and I think that's a real good point. And one should know one's core personality. Yeah, there's a camp. Okay, you know, my core personality is all I can go on for self-knowledge, right? Because that's the self I know. How's that? And there's a camp that's saying that, yes, it's a core personality that kind of is with you through your entire life. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably true for a lot of people maybe. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, it keeps you very grounded, and you know exactly who you are. I think for some people, and I believe this is for me, which is why I bias towards it, right? Because, you know, you think you know what's the best because that's what you do. Mm-hmm. I think your core evolves as you mature, as you get life experience, mm-hmm. as you're willing to learn. My personality has evolved. Now, I don't know if the core, I think even the core evolves. I really do. For some people, they're very certain. And I suppose people are saying it's a cultural mindset, a cultural religious mindset. Maybe. Maybe if you have a very, very strong and definite upbringing to be a certain way, then I think even that can evolve. Mm-hmm. Because I know for a fact, having dealt for a lot of years, I've been doing mediation for more than 30 years. I know for a fact that sometimes a core belief, which would go to your personality, right? People are calling it a prejudice. I don't like to label things, so we're going to call it a core belief. A core belief that you've had ingrained in you since childhood, which affects all of your opinions and therefore is part of your self-knowledge, can be modified. Mm-hmm. It can be. Now, gotten rid of completely? Maybe. But I'm going to go for modified. Really, sincerely modified by your experiences and by the people you meet and by, yes, by doing an alternative dispute resolution with me. Yes. But really, you can go to even a workshop and your core belief can be, you can think about it and you can go, well, I can see before me an example of maybe that's not exactly viable, or at least not in this situation, and then we'll work our way towards the rest of the world. Yeah. So I know for a fact that self-knowledge is capable of being modified, capable of learning. Mm-hmm. And I think a willingness to learn is really important. And I think it really is so basic to self-knowledge that I think we can, what do you guys think? Yeah, we can include it into this self-knowledge discussion. Yeah, I'm getting quite a bit. People are still kind of hanging on to the idea that's an outside concept of self-knowledge. But I've got a lot of agreement that it's so core to keeping your self-knowledge updated, to keeping your experiences, to thinking, reflecting on your experiences. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think any of us meant willingness to learn to be an actual class necessarily. Mm-hmm. Although we've got quite a few people who are saying that a class like a meditation class or yoga or something like that would really impact your self-knowledge and really allow you to open yourself to think about your knowledge, to think about your core self. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, we've talked about meditation on the show, and I think it's a wonderful idea. And I like quiet time. I sit sometimes and have a quiet moment and think. I'm not fond of group meditation activities just because I'm too type A. People go, yeah, you bet you are. I'm afraid that I sit in the group and I go, I wonder what they're thinking, and I think about the other people and forget to meditate deeply. But that's just me, and I think that it's an excellent exercise. Mm-hmm. We have tried. Yeah, people are saying that in order to think about self-knowledge, and we're getting a little away from the definition, but you know, the program's organic, so we'll get back to what we're doing. A lot of people are saying that they encourage quiet time and reflection in some definite way in order to make the group dynamic more amenable to the idea of the convivial atmosphere, that they have kind of a quiet time out. I have done that. I'm going to say it depends again, because, and I know you guys think I say that all the time, but it does. It depends on the group, on whether a group that is not really have dissension, but is just trying to figure out where to go on the issues, what to do, what's the practical next step. You see, they're not really fighting with each other exactly. They're all of the same basic opinion that we need to do this. There's not real contention about that fact. The idea, and they're really just trying to boil down what is the practical way of doing it. They're not really fighting. You know what I mean? There's no real self-interest one way or the other. It's all interest in creating the successful outcome, right? A group like that, and we see them, don't we? Especially in workshops and in seminars and stuff, not so much in a mediation because you've got sides. But a group like that is very amenable to a group activity that has to do with, well, I'm going to call it quiet time, but it's really like a meditation. It's really, let's take a few minutes and do a breathing exercise. I kind of like the breathing exercises. A lot of you are going for yoga-type things. Yes, but you got to look at your group and make sure that they can and they'd like to. I truly am... This is just personal again. My goodness, this show is getting personal. It doesn't usually. I'm not fond of things where you have to sit on the floor. Yeah, I don't think people like to. It's uncomfortable for quite a few people to actually do some sort of a position that they've never done before. First of all, we're not dressed for it. And it's just, it's too much. I like to just sit quietly in the chairs. If it's the right group, and I never push this, you'd have to know that everybody is the same religion, that it is, sometimes you can pray, hold hands and pray. I prefer hold hands and breathe deeply and meditate about the outcome. Let's visualize it. I like a visualization exercise. It is neutral as far as anybody's feelings towards religion. It is easy to do. It's neutral as to physical limitations. It is neutral as to discomfort level, in my opinion. Yeah, so I think that's good. And yes, people are saying they're not even big on the holding hands part. Maybe not. You could sit and think and reflect within your seats. Just fold your hands and think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I kind of like the holding hands circle, if it's not, well, even if it's a pretty big group, but I can see the point that it might be something people not that fond of touch, depending on your group. See, you can only do that if you know that your group can handle it, mm-hmm. that they're similar enough to really want to do that, because that's a step further than convivial. You see, we talk about convivial atmosphere, and that's why when we get to the end of the show, we're going to talk about the food and the potluck, and that's why we really do it, so that we have something to talk about, some way out of sitting in chairs and just talking about the issues, really getting to know each other. And this type of an exercise where you actually touch or actually kind of reflect and like that, it has to be the right group. They have to be open to that because it's a step further. But yes, I think it's a really good idea. And with a group that would be that's amenable to it, people are saying, how do you know it's the right group? George and others are saying it's because you've dealt with them for a while. You've had experience with them. They usually, I've got a lot of votes for you ask them if they'd like to. You know, I think that's a good idea. We've reached a time when perhaps we could reflect. Is everybody willing to try that? I like to ask. I do. I do like to ask my group and then not make assumptions about what they like to do. Mm-hmm. And generally, you've made a decision having a feel for the group dynamic and a feel for how people are interacting and a feel for whether or not they are amenable to each other, not in a funny way, but you know what I mean, in a let's all reflect together so that we can move forward type way, that you ask the question if we'd like to. Mm-hmm. The leader shouldn't ask, well, Clayton and others are voting for just this is our moment to, for reflection. You can do that if you're sure. I don't object to asking. I never do. I don't object to going, well, you know, let's all sit back and have a little deep breathing and reflection exercise. I think maybe the time has come for that. You see, and that kind of an idea. Some groups really do, really, really go for that. They really like it. It's part of their group dynamic. Mm-hmm. I've worked with some groups that are amenable to doing that because they're already a team, like workshops, like employment groups, and they're already in teams, so they're already really familiar with each other. Mm-hmm. I've worked with some groups that share people going for what I'm going to call cultural background, a similar cultural background, maybe even a similar religious background. I've worked with groups like that. They're the kind that really want to do that too. Sometimes it really helps bond the group dynamic, and I don't advocate this for everything. You know, at Recipe for Peace Now, we say there are no rules. It's whatever works, whatever is practical in order to get to a successful goal, a successful conclusion. Mm-hmm. I've worked with groups that really helps the group dynamic. It helps them to be a team. It helps them to move forward, to reach a negotiated settlement, a negotiated outcome, whatever it is that we're doing. I've worked with groups who really, when they get together, they'd really like to bond in a circle, maybe even when they get together and when they leave. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are saying that's the prayer groups. That's the one where people really are bound by some sort of core faith. I don't know that that's true. Yes, it's probably true for that. Necessarily deal with so many groups that are that single-minded. But I think some groups really go for reflection. They go for the moment of brotherhood, of brethren. You know what I mean? Not brotherhood because we're all men, but they go for the brethren and the team and the we're all in this together. And they want to hold hands and reflect across the group and just have a moment of silence and bonding. And I see nothing wrong with that. I'm going to say we're going to go forward on what we're talking about, but that has to do with, and we've gotten a little off of self-knowledge, but that really has to do with everyone's self-knowledge of what they bring to the group. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because really our topic is self-knowledge, but that goes to self-knowledge too, to really have a reflection so that we're all willing to learn together. Mm-hmm. That's the willingness to learn. It's really every one of us getting some self-knowledge about our part in this group, right? Yeah. So that really does go to self-knowledge. Yeah. Okay. So let's get back to the topic. Yeah. And we don't have the kind of groups that want to hold hands. Sometimes you don't. Mm-hmm. And you got to know that too. You can't. That's a thing that cannot be forced on people. You can't force the group to have the kind of dynamic where it will help to really hold hands and, as people are saying, sing kumbaya. I know this is maybe an Americanism, and this is, of course, a global show, but it's kind of like the theory of y'all sway and sing a little song together. You've got to have the right group for a thing like that, and I don't know about the song part, but even the personal reflection part for self-knowledge, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And thank you. Thank you for all of your participation. Yay. Now we're going to get back to exactly self-knowledge. So now that we've decided that we're going to be open and that we have self-knowledge, and we're going to improve our limitations, and we're going to have confidence in our abilities, and we are going to keep an open mind, but to really have a core personality. Mm-hmm. And we've decided that maybe the group dynamic could use some reflection, depending on it. You can always use reflection, but what you actually do as an exercise to encourage it is the key to whether or not you do the circle thing. Mm-hmm. So how does self-knowledge occur? How do we get it? How do we know when we've gotten it? How do we file away for self-knowledge? Pardon me. Let's see. Dianira and others are saying that self-knowledge comes from experience. Life experience and how we deal with them. Life experiences and how we deal with them. Yeah. Life experience is what happens to us, but how we deal with it, that may be the real core. Life experiences and how we deal with them is how we get self-knowledge. And that's why I truly think self-knowledge evolves. Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, you know, there's a lingering argument that how you deal with it does not change your self-knowledge. Your core self-knowledge is what causes you to deal with life experiences in a certain way. It's a way of looking at life. That's a theory. I don't disagree with it exactly. I suppose it depends what your self-knowledge, how you look at your self-knowledge. Because thank you for all of your participation. A lot of people are saying that, yeah, if self-knowledge is your life experience and how you deal with them. But you can look at it the other direction and say how you deal with your life experiences comes from your self-knowledge, from your inner self. I think they're both right. My self-knowledge tells me that I think you're both right, yes. Mm-hmm. And they're just two different ways of looking at it. But I think you kind of get to the same conclusion, don't you? Yeah, that you've got really a way of assessing your experiences. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tam and others are saying that self-knowledge occurs as a reflection on how you have handled past situations so that you can improve your response next time. Oh, that's a very good point. Self-knowledge comes from reflection on how you have handled past situations so that you can improve your response next time. Yeah, every time we have an experience, we think back on it, right? And we think whether or not we would have done it differently. Excuse me, took a sip of water. Pardon me. My goodness. Now you know this is a live show because otherwise we'd cut that out. So how you handle this situation is often a moment of reflection, right? Was it what I would have done if I had had a minute to prep for it? You know, because a lot of situations kind of occur. They kind of hit you. And so if it's something that I would have said differently, next time that situation comes up, maybe I'll handle it this way. Good point. Quite a few people, and thank you for all of your participation, Tam and others, are saying that reflection and your self-knowledge that comes from it may lead you to need to apologize. Yeah. You might go, well, you know, that was not who I am when I said that, when I did that. And I'm going to make it right. Yeah, that's probably the most useful use of self-knowledge. Yeah. Chase C. and others are saying that you acquire self-knowledge by speaking with others and getting feedback. Yeah, we're not solitary creatures. We're humans. Humans like to deal with other humans. We like to talk to each other, right? You could ask someone else's opinion and get feedback. How am I doing? Yeah. Was this the right thing to do? What should I do next time? Do I need to apologize? Yeah. I think an apology is rather a good idea sometimes, depending on what's going on. Yeah. And perhaps both sides need to apologize and start over. Never hurts. By speaking with others and getting feedback. Good point. Quite a few of you are talking about self-knowledge occurring in a, from learning in a formal setting, I'm going to call it, like getting a personality test. There's kind of a trend in the United States, and I don't know if it's elsewhere too. It probably is, but you know, I happen to be in the United States, so I kind of know what's going on here more. But I hear from all of you guys, which is fantabulous, and this is, of course, a global show, so we have lots of different kinds of people. But, you know, there's kind of a self-awareness, it gets different terms. Yeah, people use the word self-actualization. That was popular as a term, it probably still is, and self-awareness and kind of personality type tests. I think that those things are kind of popular, and that's maybe to reinforce what we think our abilities are and to learn about our limitations and try to improve them, right? That's the goal of going. I actually went to what was called a branding workshop. A branding workshop. The word branding, yeah, people are saying, what's branding? It's kind of, I suppose it's a little American term. It's a marketing term that is used, now I'm not a marketing person. Oh, some of you guys are. Let's see. Alan says that it means to delineate yourself from the rest of the pack, to make yourself different so that people look towards you, so that you, like, your product needs to do something different so that everybody wants it. Mm-hmm. You know, some companies are very good at branding, like Apple. And Apple is everywhere. And people desire it because it does, I guess, it may not even do that many more things, but they have positioned themselves as the most forward-going, the most cool of all the products. Because, you know, there's lots of cell phones and stuff out there. But Apple is worldwide recognized and worldwide desired because they have really good marketers, basically. Yeah, they have a good product too. But you can have a really good product and not make it in the marketplace because you just haven't reached the right chord with people. Yeah. And you know, you guys have all seen Apple advertising and like that, right? And they brand themselves as the most desirable and the youngest. People are going for the youngest. You know, I would use the word most hip, but that would mean that I was old because that's probably not a new term. But the one that everybody wants, and their advertisements are very, you can recognize them. There's other companies, but I think that's the most global, and this is a global show, of course. And within each of your countries, there's some sort of a store or something where they've actually, in a prior show we've talked about memes, and not in a marketing sense, but a meme can also be in a marketing sense. And by the way, prior shows, last five on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows on blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. So, yeah, so people are talking about actual personality tests and going to workshops to increase your self-knowledge. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I count yoga and meditation and anything that you do in a group. Basically anything that you pay for an instructor to tell you how, in probably a group or even an individual setting. I'm going to go for a lot of people are saying that that's how you realize your self-knowledge. You dig deep and you think about what you know and what your abilities are and what your limitations are. Yeah. And all of those things are really a branding workshop, a self-test, a meditation, a retreat. People are going for all kinds of group experiences where you have kind of a self-revelation. Where you really sit down and think about your self-knowledge in a real, real definite way. Yeah, those are all real good ways to acquire self-knowledge. How does self-knowledge occur is our topic. And yeah, they're all types of reflection, I'm going to call it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Darius is going for meditation and retreat with quiet, where nobody talks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Kirsten and others are saying that you get self-knowledge and you understand your self-knowledge and you understand yourself and what you're capable of when you reflect on your life on a regularly scheduled basis. Mm-hmm. You kind of set apart time for reflection. I think that's a great idea. Yeah, a lot of you are going for that. And a lot of you are time pressed too, and me too. I confess that I think it's a great idea. I actually do it, but I would like to. Yeah, and people are saying it's so important that you don't just like to, you actually do it. Yeah, so a reflection, a self-reflection, a self-acknowledgement, a self-assessment people are going for. Thank you for all of your participation, by the way. And to do it kind of regularly, daily. If you meditate, I suppose that's true, that's what you do. And quite a few people are saying that that's not the purpose of meditation, self-reflection. Well, it might be. We'll go for that. Because people seem to meditate to clear their mind. Well, yeah, that's good too. Yeah, I like anything that causes you to kind of deeply think. So, a regularly scheduled reflection. Just kind of put it on the calendar and make sure that you really do it, to really think, to really dig down. Mm-hmm. So, now that we've decided that we've got self-knowledge and how it occurs and how we're going to, and we've already talked somewhat about how does self-knowledge impact the group dynamic, because we talked about having a reflection as a group, having a quiet time, quite a few people are getting back to, okay, this the next question that's being asked is how does it impact the group dynamic? And we've already talked about the hand-holding and the circle and has to be the right group. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And quite a few people are going back to that because it is an interesting topic. It's a good point. And sometimes the group reflection, because we want the group dynamic to go a certain way, the group activity where you're having a reflection, you're having a meditative moment, you're having a moment of silence, you're thinking on something, sometimes it's led by the group leader. Yeah, but sometimes someone leads it. They kind of help focus the meditation, the reflection, by saying lead concepts and like that by singing a song. If it's a song that is impactful, yeah, don't see why not. Oh. Yeah, I can see the point. That depends on the group too. People are saying that if you've got a group that needs to make a team for their group interest, like a patriotic or a particular group that needs to have something done or something changed, you might sing a marching song, a rousing song, so that people get inspired to keep going, to move forward. Yeah, you'd have to have the right group. I think most of us were thinking more of a leader kind of during the meditation moment, saying words to think about, saying ideas to think about, right? Kind of making suggestions, kind of subliminal suggestions there out loud so that we all stay focused. Mm-hmm. And we're all kind of reflecting on the same thing because we're going to need to act as a team together on it, right? Right, yeah. So that's a good way to get have self-knowledge impact the group dynamic. Mm-hmm. By having all our self-knowledge work together towards a goal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, James and others are saying that our self-knowledge, our confidence in what our abilities, gives us the confidence to lead. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it gives us the confidence to say, you know, follow me. I know where I'm going. Let's lead this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sarah and others are saying that self-knowledge impacts the group dynamic because it creates interaction with the participants so that you can assess everybody's self-knowledge, their core, their abilities and their limitations. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can have interaction that affects the group dynamic by bringing everybody's best to the table. Right. Tupac and others are saying that your self-knowledge impacts the group dynamic because having a positive personality creates a welcoming atmosphere. Yeah. Having a positive personality creates a welcoming atmosphere. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gita and others are going for quiet time for reflection as a group. Just silence. Just thinking about it. You can't make people think about the issues, but there they are. They are reflecting with other people that are in the group, so they don't need to lead them in some way. Because quite frankly, if you lead them, then they might be able to think outside the box, and there might be some other way that you don't know about. You can't lead to it because you don't know it. Nicholas and others are saying that the way that self-knowledge impacts the group dynamic is by welcoming open dialogue. Mm-hmm. Yeah. By welcoming people to give their opinion, by welcoming open dialogue. Mm-hmm. This is a very good point that Suki is making. Participant confidence creates group confidence. Yeah. Good point. Participant confidence creates group confidence. And that's really what the group dynamic is, right? It's everybody finding their way within the group and having confidence and going forward to proceed to a successful outcome. Mm-hmm. Yes, you need confident participants. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I kind of like this one. Harris says that the self-knowledge impacts the group dynamic because it gives you the ability to focus on the task at hand without drama. Focus on the task at hand without drama. Good point. Without having to have too much histrionics. Yeah, just focus and relate and reflect, and we're all going to do it together. Yeah, the group dynamic. Mm-hmm. Jirl and others are saying that a strong leader creates participant confidence that we know what we're doing. Yeah. A strong leader creates participant confidence that we know what we're doing. And that adds to all of our self-knowledge. It adds to our abilities, right? And detracts from our limitations because we all know where we're going. Mm-hmm. And essentially speaking, this is really true. A lot of people are using the word team. And really, Brody and others say that team building across boundaries is really how self-knowledge affects the group dynamic because you're not worried about outside prejudice. Team self-knowledge affects the group dynamic through team building across boundaries because you're not worried about outside prejudices. Yeah. You know, and that's really why Recipe for Peace Now does the networking and the food and everything, because that's the idea. We need to cross the boundaries of opinion, of prejudice, of preconceived notions. You know, we talk about these things all the time, and we need to cross them and not worry about outside prejudices of somebody else. We are secure in our self-knowledge and our abilities so that we can go forward as a group, as a team, to get something done. Yeah, that's the idea. And that's why, and it's kind of a segue, oh, I see we're running out of time, which is good because it means we've had lots of wonderful discussion. But that's really the reason why, and I say this all the time, the reason why Recipe for Peace Now advocates having some food, some shared experience of eating something delicious, maybe a glass of wine too, that is not directly the issues that stand between us so that we can get some knowledge of each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that our self-knowledge can extend to the group to make a team. So that we're open to it, right? And it's really a way, the food is a tool. It's not, I mean, we might be hungry, but it might be dinner time, but it's really meant as a tool to get us talking. Mm-hmm. Pardon me, to increase our self-knowledge by understanding someone else's. Mm-hmm. So that we can understand how to deal with each other, how to negotiate, how to be, how to reach a successful conclusion. Yeah, that's really the key to it. And now I'm going, yes, I am. I'm going to, people are saying, you're running out of time, you got to get to the recipes. This is true. I'm going to say the thing that I always say about the food part because it's so important. If you're going to have food in the room, and you are, because we've just decided and talked about the fact that it's really a team-building tool. It crosses boundaries. It lets us all do something together that we like. It creates a good group dynamic by creating a convivial atmosphere. And if you're going to do this, you need to, in advance, inquire and take a survey as to whether anyone has a food allergy, a food prohibition, or a religious prohibition to some sort of food. You don't want anybody to have a bad time. And you impart this knowledge to everyone so that nobody accidentally brings something that someone can't eat. Yeah. And also, you ask people to label what they're bringing. Not what's it called, but what's in it, a list, so that I can run my eye down it and see if I can eat it safely. Mm-hmm. And so that we all know, right? Right. And also, it's very important, I think, for the host. I don't like to run out of food. This is one of my things. I think it makes a bad party. And then some people have some, and then some people don't. This is bad, too. So I think we should bring extras. And one of the things I like to bring always is a safe dish, a safe recipe. Now, what's a safe recipe? Well, we've taken the survey, right? So we know what people can't eat. And it is a dish that doesn't have too many ingredients. My participants, and mine are different than yours, would be familiar with the ingredients. They would have eaten it before, know that they can. And it is something that I think most people in the group can eat. In fact, I've looked very carefully at the replies to the survey, and it looks like it's going to be a safe thing for them to eat. Yeah, good. So I think we're only going to get to the safe recipe this time. We don't have too much time. But it's very nice. It's chicken with apricots, and I like it very much, and it's very delicious. Now, if you can, fresh apricots is lovely, but they're kind of perishable, and they turn kind of brownish, let's face it. And in my area, they're really expensive. It's kind of hard to come by. So I'm going to use dried ones, and you may have to soak them overnight. Yeah. So here, we're going to have 2 tablespoons of oil. Let's have, 2 pounds at least of, 2 big chickens. Let's have, not 2 pounds, but let's see, about 6 pounds anyhow. Let's have 8 breasts and some thighs and some and like that, and we're going to cut them into chunks. The breasts are the easiest. In my area, you can buy skinless, boneless breasts. Man, they're practically cut into chunks for you. You just run a knife through it, and there it is. I would say about 5 pounds of them because I like to have lots of chicken in it. Let's have 3 large garlic cloves that we're going to crush. You think I use too much garlic like some people do? Take out some. 2 teaspoons of ground cinnamon. I like cinnamon with this stuff. I do. I like it to be sweet. Let's have also 2 teaspoons of ground ginger. Cinnamon and ginger, I think, go together extremely nicely. 3 cups of dried apricots. Let's soak them overnight. I think the trick to soaking apricots is to not use water or some sort of a sweetened water. People use sweetened water. I like to do it in orange juice. I think it gives them a lovely flavor, and it plumps them up real nice. Mm-hmm. So we've got 5 pounds, maybe even more, of the chicken breasts. If you're buying just the meat, you know what I mean, just the breasts, there's no waste. There's no waste in the poundage. But if you're doing something that has bones and skin and things, you got to buy more because you need to have it be able to make the chucks. So 3 cups of dried apricots. Let's soak them overnight in the fridge in a couple cups of orange juice. I really do. I think that's the best way of doing it. You can disagree, but I think it gives it a lovely flavor. And now let's have a big can of chickpeas, garbanzo beans. You know, to drain that, you don't use – yeah, you can use uncanned ones if you really must. But, you know, they're hard. You've got to cook them and stuff. I'm going to use a can. A big can of like a 16-ounce of garbanzo beans. Really chickpeas, right? You drain all the sauce, the juice, and that's no good. It's kind of slimy. You drain it real thoroughly. You run them under the water, and you get rid of the loose skins. Yeah, you can eat them, but they look really ugly. So sometimes there's like loose skins off the chickpeas. Ooh, get rid of them. Yeah. And then we're going to have... Well, that'll do it, really. We're going to have some preserved lemon if you can find it. I like a nice preserved lemon. I can find that fairly easily around here. It comes in a little jar, like jam. And I think that's delicious. If you can't find an actual preserved lemon, you could use a little bit of lemon curd just for the flavor or some lemon zest, which is the outside of the lemon that you use a microplane on, right? Right. So we're going to heat the oil, and we're going to cook the chicken. You know how you put the pieces in, you turn them, you make sure that they're done. They're nice and golden brown on all the sides. It takes about 5 minutes per batch, maybe a little bit less. You move them from the pan, you cook more, because they won't all fit in the big pan. Even, I don't know how big your pan is, but you need a little room to flip them and stuff. So we're cooking them through. Both sides. You know, it doesn't take too long because we've already cut them into chunks. So it's not a real long process. Got it all cooked through. Stuck them on a plate. Mm-hmm. And now we might have a little too much oil in the pan, depending. You got to look at it because, you know, the chicken made a little bit of liquid too when it got cooked. Yeah. So you might have to pour off a little bit. But we're going to add the onions. And did I say 2 large onions sliced? 2 sweet onions. I'm not sure I said onions. You got to have two onions. I like the Vidalias. I like the sweet ones. You all know that, I think. Tend to cook sweet rather than spicy, I think. So we're going to cook the onions until they get nice and translucent. Not too long, 3 minutes. We're going to add the garlic, another couple of minutes. And we're going to add the cinnamon and the ginger because it's going to all be incorporated. We're going to stir it around until it gets incorporated. Well, it takes 1 minute. It's already all cooked and delicious. Yes. Now, you know that chicken that we already cooked? We browned it on all sides, and it's really pretty cooked through. We're going to take all the chicken and stick it back into the pot with the onion and the garlic and the spice and the cinnamon and the ginger and the garlic and like that. We're going to put it back in. We're going to just add enough water to just cover the chicken. And we bring it to a boil, mix it all around, of course. And we bring it to a boil and reduce the heat and let it simmer. Because we want it to all incorporate. Don't add too much water. In fact, if you're me, I prefer not water but chicken broth. Just because it gives it extra taste. Yay! We've all got it all simmering. It's been about 20 minutes. We had it covered. It's all incorporated, right? Yum, yum, yum. Now we're going to add the apricots and the chickpeas. We're going to simmer that. We're going to get it all incorporated. Doesn't take too long because everything's already hot. And the chickpeas are really cooked, right? I mean, they came out of a can. They're already edible. And the apricots are already soft because they've been soaking, right? Yes, we did indeed throw all the orange juice in, too. People asking about that part. Yes, you threw the apricots kind of soaked up the orange juice overnight. But whatever's in the apricot container, yes, you put it all in. The trick to this is that you have to cook it long enough and simmer it. It takes about 10 minutes because the apricots are cold. They've come out of the fridge, right? So they need to be heated through, and also you have to be real certain that the chicken is cooked completely through. Because when we browned it on all sides, we didn't really cook it through. Now, we've done some boiling, which probably cooked it through, but we want to be sure. And you need to get the apricots, cools everything down, so you have to get it all back heated. And the chickpeas are not hot either. They're room temperature, really. Okay. So, we've got it. You've got a wonderful dish with the apricots and the chicken and the onions and the garlic and everything. You take the pieces out of the pan, and then you bring the liquid to a boil again, because you're going to make a sauce. You can add a little bit of flour to it to thicken it. I personally like to just boil it down to kind of reduce it by half because there's not much in there, right? And then you add the little piece of the lemon zest or the preserved lemon or just for a little bit of taste, extra taste to it. It goes really nice with the orange and the cinnamon and the garlic. Yeah, yummy. And the ginger, yeah. And now you pour that over the pieces, and then you serve it over with rice or with couscous or with some sort of a, yeah, George always votes for mashed potatoes. So, yeah, why not? But I usually put the starch that's going to go underneath it, the pasta, if you like, yeah, separate so that people can take some and then take some chicken. Also, some chicken and apricots, yes. So, delicious, very popular, kind of sweet and apricot-y and like that. I like those kinds of blends of flavors. Most people do. And that is our safe dish because most people can eat it. And I see that we are actually out of time. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. If you would like to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. The last 5 shows archived on our website. All of the shows archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. I hope you learned something. I always learn something on these shows. Thank you, and please do come again. Bye-bye.